What's good, y'all? It's that time of the year, and we've got bills to pay. So if you enjoy listening to the show, hit the links in the description to support by donating, joining our Patreon, or buying some new merch. If about 10% of you listening right now donate $10 to support the show, we'd have enough to cover an entire year's worth of cost of production. Over the years, I've been very intentional about turning down ads for things that didn't align with our values, so you don't have to listen to us talk about gambling or boner pills or any of that other crap. But that's only possible through the support of you, our listeners. So we've created some new ways for you to support. And again, if you enjoy listening to the show, hit the links in the description to support by donating, joining our Patreon, or buying some of our new merch. And of course, don't forget to tell someone you like their kicks today. You never know how far a compliment will take you, and we all know how good it feels to be on the receiving end of some appreciation. Now let's get into today's show.
Jordan trying to shake off Starks. Oh, what a move by Jordan! LeBron James with no regard for human life!
Final seconds. Bryant for the win.
Bang! Iverson. Against Gil, the crowd on its feet. Allen for the win!
Welcome to the Sneaker History Podcast.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of the Sneaker History Podcast. You got myself, Mike, here, and we have Nick with me running a two-man show. We got a very, very special guest today. If you guys look at anything sneakers, I know you've seen this gentleman pop up from Full Size Run to the Complex Sneaker Podcast. I got Mr. Matt Welty here. What's up, Matt, man? We appreciate you with your busy schedule showing up with us today.
Yeah, it's great to see you. Obviously great to see you, Nick, too, as well, you know. Huge throwback into our yesteryear of sneaker media.
Yeah, man. Yeah. I was trying to think about like when the last time we ran into each other. It's probably even been like pre-pandemic Complex Con, like 5 or 6 years at least.
Oh, wow.
Which is insane.
Yeah, for sure. And it's like those Complex Cons are like so crazy too, because it's like hey,
you're passing
by. You see like 1,000 people, and it's almost like in your mind, it's like, oh crap, I did run into so-and-so. You're saying hi to everyone, you know?
Yep, definitely. Yeah, man. Well, it's cool. I'm going to let Mike run the show, but it's cool to reconnect with you. And, you know, I think people probably know that we spent many late nights in the Complex offices knocking out ridiculously long lists and all that stuff, man. You know, 10 plus years ago.
I think I still have I say to people when they like want us to like write big stories in the office, when they're like, hey, you should do like the 100 best something. And I'm like, hey, look, there's been plenty of nights like 10 plus years ago where like I didn't go to sleep because I was writing 50 things you didn't know about New Balance. And I just like don't have it in me anymore to like go through the CMS back end and like put together these long stories, because that's all we used to do. And it's weird. I get this like anxiety feeling that like comes in me when, you know, we have to write something of that nature. So I'm sure Nick has the same feeling too, of remembering.
Just tell him pull up the historical records. We've done this already. Just rinse and repeat it, guys. Right. There you go.
Do you happen to remember like your first like big thing like that? Because I know when we first met, you were writing on like the Style Channel for Complex back then, right? Like,
yeah.
But like that was like the thick of us doing. You know, I remember my first big thing was the 100 Air Force Ones, the best 100 Air Force Ones of all time. Geez. And it was like
a weekend to be in there. I really think it was that story, 50 Things You Don't Know About New Balance,
really?
Because that was big at the time. Like on the internet, it's like TK Things You Don't Know About such and such, you know, and it was just like super BuzzFeed internet-y at the time. And as you guys know, I was like still into New Balance back then. And I remember like Russ had this special like New Balance book that they had given him that was like not for the public. Not that I didn't know a lot of the stuff myself, but Russ had this like super thick like history of New Balance that was only
Bible
like
New Balance.
Yeah, it wasn't made available to the public. And he's like, hey, if you want to write something about New Balance, here's like the actual published history of the company. And I was I'm like, that made it like, not that we copied it, but we took like, you know, bits and pieces of the history that just that, especially in like, what's great what you guys do is, you know, try to like, make an archive of sneaker history on the internet, where it's like, if you want to know something about sneakers, it's like, yeah, maybe we collectively know it, but sometimes on the internet itself, there really isn't this like cache of just information of like how many pairs of this shoe came out, what happened at this sneaker release in, you know, 2008. So it's like kind of our job to like retell those stories, at least put them out there in digital format instead of it just being like, you know, kind of like spoken tradition that gets passed on from generation to generation.
Yeah, it's like folklore almost. I mean, you talk about stuff like the Galaxy phone coming back for everybody who was into sneakers in 2012. It's like telling this tall tale of someone selling a car or trading a car for a shoe and mall riots. So it's cool to have it written down, to have this, like I say, this reference point to actually point back to.
Well, because we all talk about it and it's like we don't need to explain to each other because we were all there for it and we all know what happened. But I feel like as you get older, you don't realize there's like a whole generation under you and there's a whole generation under them who weren't there for these things. And maybe they weren't there on Nike Talk and knew that, like, you know, that there was a riot outside of a mall in San Jose for the Grape Fives when they dropped in 2006. Like, we all know that stuff, but like the kids don't know it. And I feel like we need to like put it out there and record it as part of like our collective history of this.
For sure. That's definitely should be something. I feel like that's not talked about enough. It's like the interaction to get this shoe. We always talk about the, oh, this released on this day for X amount of dollars, what it meant to the culture, but like the live events, like, oh, this news story was written, this person, this happened, like I said, this day. I think something we should dive in more to now when you say that.
Yeah, you know what's even more interesting now is like we're getting to the point where people have like kind of, you know, like the generation, I would say slightly above or slightly older than us, where people have like been into sneakers up until those points and then they dip out and they're like they have kids or they have a family or they go, you know, find a career and then they find, you know, a little extra money and they go back to sneakers and revisit these shoes. So there's like even like on the front side of those stories, right, there's like this layers there's these layers of generations that have that, like, to your point, Matt, I think, like, you know, we think about it because we're talking about sneakers all the time. But like the reality is, like, we probably need to be thinking about, like, we're writing and we're sharing these stories and we're putting this stuff out there. Really, we need to be thinking about like our parents or our grandparents so they get the whole big picture, right? Because otherwise, people get just that little bits and pieces from wherever they were really passionate and into it, you know.
Yeah, we were actually having that conversation. Me and Brendan were having that conversation the other day in the office, and it was kind of around, like, you know, Nike's strategy of bringing back all these, like, what do they call, like, the cult classics or, like, you know, the mega grails where it's like, oh, there's the rumor that, like, the PlayStation Air Force Ones were coming back or Undefeated or Stash and all that sort of stuff. And I feel like those shoes obviously mean a lot to, like, our generation, but maybe like the younger generation doesn't have the same affinity for it, even though we've written about them on the websites and whatnot and talked about them on podcasts and talk about them on sneaker Twitter and stuff. It's like sometimes the stories don't get passed down, and it's like also crazy to think, like, a shoe that came out in 2006, there could have been someone who was a hardcore collector on Nike Talk who no longer is even into sneakers anymore. And like, that's totally okay too, but like their life went on and they became a doctor and now they have a family and a house and like they have their couple cool shoes from when they were like 21 years old in their basement, but like they don't go buy and collect shoes anymore. So it's like maybe even, you know, the audience for those like super niche, like hype shoes has like aged out of sneakers in a sense where it's like, you don't want to say that people like are out of sneakers, but there's definitely people who used to be into sneakers 15 or 20 years ago who like don't have boxes and boxes stacked in their houses anymore, you know?
So those people are the smart ones. Don't look at any of us for
like, don't look at my background at all. Yeah. I am not one of those smart ones, apparently. But you can, I mean, you can tell that it's very apparent when you look at things like you talk about the Mega Grails coming back, like the Wu-Tang Dunks, best example, because that was something back in, you know, early 2000s. Everybody was like, I have to have a pair of that. I wish they would make them. Shoe. Exactly. It's a unicorn, and they release them, and you can easily, well, at the time, easily go walk in, pick it up. And it's because, like you said, there's two different levels now of youth who just don't know or didn't care about it because they weren't into Wu-Tang or they moved on from Dunk Highs. And then the people who, like I said, got jobs and moved on and just don't care anymore for whatever reason or another. And it's like, you just have us in this kind of middle part. And we're still kind of, you know, we're in it, still hunting for things. But again, it makes our lives easier in the fact, oh, I can add this to my collection. Or if you need to have something in your hand to write about it, it makes it easier for that to happen.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's like that shoe coming back and flopping was like such a big disappointment, and it was kind of like a telltale sign of like where we're at in today's generation. And like we had RZA on the Complex Sneakers podcast, and it was really cool to hear him talk about the history of the shoe. But it was like in my head, the whole time I'm thinking ironic, where it's like, you know, the whole phrase like Wu-Tang is for the children, but now it's like children don't care about Wu-Tang, like, sadly enough, because I was like, that's all I cared about when I was, you know, growing up. But it's just like the irony of the situation where it's like, and I've said it before, where I think Nike's like better served for this generation making the new grails, like Cortez 95s, Kids of Immigrants, Air Max Sunders. I feel like those are the stash Air Max 95s or the Pigeon Dunks, you know. Maybe the hype isn't to the same level, but like that's what this generation is going to remember as like the hot shoes that they like needed to get, you know.
For sure. No, I agree with that. That's something that it just changed, like everybody's taste of change, and it's funny. So Matt, when did you start at Complex?
I started as an intern in 2012.
2012. Okay.
Yeah.
Nick, when did you start?
I was there a little bit before Matt, so I think I moved to New York in 2011.
Okay.
Matt, you probably remember this. Like, I signed up for Complex Sneakers on my phone. You know, like, we didn't have those accounts when I started. And, like, I think you started right after that. So, like, we had just broke it out into, you know, we also had, like, the Sneaker Report was, like, a part of that, I think. Like, we had, like, the kind of three things going when they acquired Soul Collector and... but yeah, like it was such a different time, you know, because it was like,
I mean,
we're all like nerds, but like we were like hardcore nerds then, right? Like we were like even the, you know, like you're partially like the cool kids,
like weirdos.
Like you're partially like the weirdos that like sneakers too much, but then you're also kind of like the people that are sort of into sneakers come to and ask questions, so you're kind of cool, in that sense.
For
it's
sure.
just this weird kind of world where now. You know, it's such a big thing. It's everywhere, right? Like we're, you know, we talk about it. Everybody's talking about it for the most part. And then that turns so many people off to it. And, you know, to Matt's point, it's evolved so much that like those early years, like I feel really lucky to have been a part of it, you know, just to like, hey, look, I was just nerding out about this, you know, for decades of my life before we got to that point. And then it became like a thing that I could do for a career, you know? But yeah, I think it was 2011 when I went there first. Sorry.
Okay.
Yeah, I was there fall 2012. I remember I came in as like an intern for the style section where Gian De Leon, if you're familiar with him, kind of like famous like, you know, men's style writer.
Yeah.
He had like, you know, asked me, or someone had given me a contact for him, and I had been like, hey, you know, I write for this other menswear blog that you guys have written about on the site. Like, I just want to become an intern because I'm graduating school at Rutgers. And he's like, yeah, cool, come through. And it was when Complex was still on 23rd Street next to the Home Depot. And like the office was attached to Marc Ecko's like clothing company. So it felt like super just like how to make it in America, like the devil,
totally
devil wears Prada. Like it feels like this is like I'm going to the cool guy like magazine in New York City, you know.
That's cool.
That was the whole vibe, and I was there for like – I didn't have an office because I'm an intern. They had me in Matthew Henson, who's like ASAP Rocky's like personal stylist.
Oh, cool.
They had me in his fashion closet sitting at a desk, sitting at a table in the corner just like writing like news posts about like ASAP Rocky wears Balmain and Ben Trill. You know, like that was like what we were on. And I think I was writing a story about like – the most stylish R&B groups from the 90s. It's like super complex sort of style. And I forget which group I was talking about. And one of the guys was wearing Air 180s.
Okay.
And it's like the Air 180. It's not the Air Max 180. And I always thought it was Air Max 180. And I remember Russ Benson and Nick had like an office together that you guys shared. And I asked like Noah Johnson, who was the editor of the style team at the time, I'm like, do you know? And he goes, no. But like, he's like, go ask the sneaker guys. So like, I don't know Russ or Nick like personally at all. And I'm just like an intern. I think I'm like 26 years old at the time or something. So I was like, I was a little bit older, but I was like, just kind of like nervous, you know? And I walk in and I'm like, hey, I got to ask you guys a question. Is it Air 180 or Air Max 180? And Russ is like, why are you asking me this? You know, like, he's like, what is this for? Why are you asking me this? Like, just like, you know, typical, like, you know, what you'd expect from Russ. And then I was like, just for a story. And he's like, well, just go with that then. Or whatever Nike says on the website, go for that. And I'm like, okay. And then I walked out. And then I think, like, Nick had, like, talked to me after or something. And then – because I worked at Foot Locker for like 8 years before that.
Yeah.
I used to work
at
Dick's, and I used to work at Timberland. I had all this footwear retail experience. And like the people at Complex told me that they were more impressed that I worked at Foot Locker than me writing for a menswear blog. And I was like, wait, what? Like,
all right.
Yeah.
Working in the sneaker store is viewed as more valuable experience than actually like the stuff I went to school for, which was like this weird thing. And then I mean, Nick was like, oh, you know sneakers? And I was like, yeah,
as soon
really
as I
really
found out
sneakers.
You worked at Foot Locker, I was like, we got to get this guy on the sneakers.
And you're like
the
golden goose because of that. I'm sorry, you did what for 8 years? Come on down. Like,
Yeah. I like had a journalism degree and I worked at Foot Locker. So people were like, oh, wow, you can like write, you can do this. So you had like hit me up and been like, hey, do you want to write some, just write some posts in the morning or something like that? And it just like started like doing it on the side because I was doing like the style thing like full time. But yeah. I was just doing sneakers and then like, a couple, like, I think, well, you had actually left. You were leaving Complex at the time, right?
Yeah.
I think.
Yep. Not long after
Gerald
that. I think
Flores was coming in.
Yep. Okay.
To be the editor. And they were just like, we have openings. Like, do you want to just work for the sneakers team? And I was like, sure. Like, my first real job. And
So the question I have for you, the reason I asked when you started is because at the time, like we talked about, sneakers were more niche, more cultish, like cults, like, hey, small people. Like sneakers in certain ways, like would be New Balance, Nike, you fill in the blank. Mm-hmm. Do you find it's been easier then to write for sneakers since it's for a small audience? Or as sneakers have become more mainstream and literally everyone and their mother has some kind of insight to a sneaker, is it harder now because the audience has become more massive, for lack of better words?
I never thought about it that way, but like I guess like Nick said, it's like up and down because mm-hmm. – people come to us because we're like the actual like sneaker nerds, you know, but then mm-hmm. with sneakers, there's such a mainstream thing that, mm-hmm. you know, the majority of people just want them to view them as style and they don't view it as something nerdy at all because they view it as something really cool, which sneakers mm-hmm. are really cool. But then like when they come to you and you like come off as like kind of nerdy about shoes, they're like, well, this guy can't know anything about sneakers. He's a nerd, you know, like, so they kind of almost like, it's like a double-edged sword of mm-hmm. you're not like the super cool guy that they think of in their mind when they're like, that's the sneaker guy, you know?
Yeah. But yeah, that's so true. I think too, like the other part of that, and Matt, I'd love to hear your take on this, but like the other part of that is like when we were doing this in 2012, you know, like,
yeah,
we didn't have to be face on camera. We didn't have to be mm-hmm. doing the little green screen cutouts on Instagram to promote the shows. Yep. We, you know, like I worked a ton on Quickstrike and, you know,
yep.
Like, but yet like I was never on camera. Like my name is in the credits and stuff, but like, I didn't really want to be on camera back then. I was like, I like the like kind of the strategy and the organizational aspects of like a content group creating mm-hmm. stuff and being a part of that. Yeah. But like that was also one of the things that was like really, you know, like you remember Jack Irwin, like, you know, it was one of the tough conversations that I had first thing was kind of like, oh, we want you to manage the sneaker channel. And I was like, I just want to write, you know, like I love writing. Like,
yeah, and you Jack don't want to like do all like busy work.
And like I came to love the other aspects of the business of content because of my mm-hmm. opportunity at Complex. But you know, it's still one of those things where like you go up, there's like almost like two separate elevators in the world of you know, media and writing, right? So mm-hmm. like you either go up as a writer or you go up as like a, you know,
like
kind of behind the scenes manager. Yeah, like,
okay.
Yeah, exactly. And I think now like it's got to be even harder for both of those because there's obviously less people getting paid to write. But, mm-hmm. you know, we're in this time where it's just expected that everything goes to certain platforms and gets distributed everywhere when we kind of lucked out back then because we would be like, oh, well, we put it on Twitter a handful of times over the course of a week, or we got it on our Instagram, you know, or, I mean, you probably remember back then we would fight to get our posts on the main Complex Instagram account so we could get the bigger audience,
you know? Facebook page. It was like Facebook was the number one traffic driver for
exactly.
Just not for us, but like for, you know, businesses, across the internet.
Yeah,
I mean, like that era was like crazy because it's like I started, you know, full time at Complex at 2013 and just like writing, you know, like just doing like small news posts or like writing stories about like how to pin roll your jeans with sneakers, you know, like, like
what a time, what a time.
Yeah, 2014 era. But then like I had a whole like I feel like I had a whole career before the majority of people who like know me for like my career. Before that, because I was just like a writer on the internet, and it's like I have interviews with LeBron James and Kobe Bryant and like all these like big people, but they were just like text interviews, you know, on like the platform. And at the time, it's like not that I don't think it was great, but it was like I feel like maybe with the writing stuff, it can like only take you so far, because especially people read less and less these days. And I never had aspirations to be on camera. I felt like at the time, because we had launched Complex News, and I felt like I looked at those people and they're all like legends, because it was like Jinx and Sean Evans and Emily Oberg, you know, and Speedy. And it's all these people that are like so great on camera, Tamra Dia, you know, et cetera. And I looked at them and they just seemed like so professional to me. And like for me, it's like I'm just like a regular guy. So I just looked at like the standard that they were able to set. And I'm like, I don't feel like I'm not that person. You know, and even like Joe doing sneaker shopping, I feel like he's like really professional on camera. And I just like never like viewed myself as that person. And then like you had mentioned Facebook, and we had started like a Facebook Live was a big thing at the time, because we had like a contract with Facebook. We had to do an X amount of Facebook Live minutes. Like a year or whatever, because Facebook was really driving traffic like through that, whether real or not. I don't know. Probably not. But I think originally I had this one like sneaker review show where it was me and Marco Negretti, and it was like the two of us.
I remember
like,
that.
Sat down and we're just like, hey, I got these new Adidas shoes, and we would just like talk about them for like 30 minutes because we had to fill out like the slot. That was like 2016 maybe. And then after that, I had written a story that got like a bunch of hate on the internet, where I'd interviewed everyone in sneaker YouTube, and this was like peak like clickbait sneaker YouTube era of like Heist going into like an outlet and being like, Yeezys at the, you know, at the outlet store. Yeah. I read a story about sneaker YouTube being obsessed with clickbait. And then Brendan and Rich Lopez, who started Full Size Run, were like, hey, do you just want to like come on and talk about your story? We're in like a little closet. Like I'm in like this little conference room at Complex. And I just talked about it on camera once. And then I think like Brendan was on vacation or something like that, or Rich was. Yeah. And they were just like, hey, do you want to fill in for one of them? And I said, sure. And they were like, someone, I think like NCB or someone like that was like, hey, it's interesting that you guys actually argued about stuff, because before it was just like, those shoes are cool, cop, you know, and everyone just agreed with everything. And they looked at like Everyday Struggle, where people were like arguing with each other. And they were like, hey, we should make a sneaker show where you guys actually argue with each other about stuff. And that's kind of was the earliest iteration of Full Size Run. So that's like, I got thrown into it without ever expecting to be in it, you know?
Happy accident. But so I went, because I heard you mention this. You did an interview with our buddy Hoss over at My First Kicks.
Oh, yeah. Great guy.
And yeah, dude, he's awesome. And I saw you mentioned that. I was like, let me go find this episode. Cause I remember watching Full Size Run when it started, but it'd been so long. It's like 7-8 years ago. And I know the episode you're talking about. And the way Rich introduced you, he said that the most notorious sneaker writer on the internet. I was like, God, dog. I was like, and I was sitting there thinking, I was like, you know what? Was it because you had your own opinion, or was it just for that one article? Like, where did that title come from?
I just think that there weren't, and even to this day, I don't think that there's a lot of like sneaker writers on the internet. And like Nick can, I'm sure you can attest to that too, where it's like, it's not a bad thing, but most of the sneaker blogs out there are literally just sneaker blogs. Like they just post like these little short things. And then like maybe some of the sites, you know, for 6 months, they'll have a, you know, they'll have a direction where they might start doing interviews or think pieces, et cetera. But like, I'd say majority of sneaker internet is just like Instagram account and like news post, right? Like that's the sneaker internet. Like, And now there's more sites too, where it's like sites like Anscape, you know, et cetera, that like mm-hmm. will do, or like Business of Fashion, that will do like more like editorial sneaker content. But there really weren't that many people like actually writing about sneakers online, you know, or at least like in a long form thing, or like being able to actually like write like a 1,000-word story where you like give your opinion on something. So it's a very like, it's like, you know, it's like a big fish in a small pond sort of a scenario where I'm not really like, it's like, you know how it's like every single year, like Ariel Helwani wins like the best like MMA journalist, but it's like, who's he competing with?
Like against himself. Like that's it.
I think too, like the other thing that I always admire about you that you do really well is like you're not tearing things down just to tear things down when you have a negative opinion on them. And I think that is something that is completely missing in the sneaker space. Right. And, and you know, like I would also say that, you know, Brendan and Russ and, you know, there's a handful of people that can do that. But I think what also kind of happened with you on your journey is you kind of were always like, you know, had the courage to take that stance when it wasn't an easy stance to take. Right. I think that people behind the scenes of this world know these kind of things, but the audience that we have, that you guys have, don't necessarily understand how nuanced you have to be in a lot of, you know, opinion pieces, right? Because you do have to be careful when, you know, like you said, Facebook is cutting checks at a certain time. Well, how many, I've shit on Facebook for a decade plus. So like I'm not going to be able to write a piece about Facebook politely, you know? And I think that happens in sneakers too, right? Like, and unfortunately, like, you know, to your point, you get these other kind of, you know, they've popped up, you know, there's dozens of them that have come and gone over the years where it's like, oh, cool, we're a new sneaker blog. And it's like, nobody really understands how difficult it is to blog consistently and write consistently about sneakers. Like it is super exhausting if you're doing that every single day and having substance and opinion and conversations that matter, you know? And I think that was like the thing that I always admired about you, which I think the internet kind of took you and like villainized you in a lot of ways. And then you leaned into it for a lot of the episodes.
Well, I think a lot of that
not,
too
not
was
villain,
like,
but like, you know what I mean?
No, I get what you're saying. But I also think a lot of that was like creative, like editing too on, you know, on full size, where it's like people like would make reactions seem like a little more dramatic than they actually were. Like if you were sitting there, but I also think too, where it's like my taste and opinions, like maybe they're not like, I don't try to see the whole thing that I think where people got things misunderstood is that like, I'm not a contrarian. Like I'm not someone out there who's like simply just trying to go against the grain to like hate things, to like be edgy or like hip. Like that's really not where I come from. Like I think if anyone like listens to me long enough, they can actually like understand like why I like these things and like where my appreciation for like this aesthetic like comes from. I think like, I hope to do it. And I've had like a lot of people say to me over the years where they're like, hey, I really hated you at first because you liked New Balance and Asics and suede Adidas, but then like as time went on, I kind of understood like where you were coming from. Like I think it's really easy to like kind of like weed out where someone's just being like ironic a little bit about something like in like, not to like harp on it, but like my one thing I'll go back to is like Nick is like, I remember like Russ was a huge fan of those like all white leather Janoskis with like the Velcro straps on them. And I feel like maybe like that's a bit of like him being like a contrarian just to be like, well, fuck you. This is the opposite of, you know, anything anyone in sneakers is into. So I'm just going to like do the complete like 180 of it. And I like, I don't personally, I don't try to do that. I don't really grab anything just to be like, hey, people like Jordans, so I'm going to wear something different. Like that's not really like, my take. I just like what I like, you know, and I feel like it's paid dividends in the sense that like you've been able to like create your own identity, because I feel like other people may think that they're cooler than you, and maybe in like the time being, like to the public perception, they may be, but there's so many other people who are just like them. And then as years go on, it's like their personality doesn't really stick out. You know, they're kind of like there's a 100 other content creators who like the same shoes that they like. And maybe they don't have as much longevity because people really can't like resonate with them because they can just go to someone else and get the same thing.
Yeah, well, authenticity goes a long way, especially in when it comes to media, because when people look at you, they're going to be, well, can I relate to this person? Or is this person put on an act? Because a lot of times, even in the sneaker world, people have these characters they have to upkeep. And it's harder and harder as time goes on because tastes naturally change. So there might be different things. And now you can't do that. You can't be your natural self. And what's cool is if watching you this entire time, you've been authentic to your belief and your style and say, hey, you know what? I like this. And I've even heard you say things like, you know what? I like this Jordan. I may not wear him as much, but you've caught me wearing this Jordan, or so on and so forth. It's just, you have been, you've been Matt Welty the entire time, not trying to be some character to put on for the media or for Instagram or whoever it may be. And that's why I think the staying power is there because of that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think there's a lot of things that you can appreciate in life and just have it not be for you. Like, it's not the first thing that comes into mind, but I could just say something like, you know, like Raptor 7s, right? Like, great shoe, right? But I really, it's not something that I'm going to go out and purchase and like put by my door and like throw on Raptor 7s and have that be like, you know, a representation of myself. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's just like, it doesn't feel like who I am. Right. Yeah. But it's like, I can still say, you know what, this is a classic Air Jordan. The shoe is great. You know, if you like the shoe, you should go out and buy it. Right. Or it's like, there's plenty of things that just kind of don't fit with the way you like want to present yourself to the world. You know what I mean? Like, I love Green Bean 5s. I don't have no desire to actually go and buy and wear Green Bean 5s, you know, where it's like,
No, title like of this art. Episode. Title of this episode, by the way, Matt Welty hates Raptor 7s, like Raptor Jordan 7s.
Flick,
right? I think like that's one thing that I like. I mean, you know, like we're what, 5+ years into the podcast, Mike? Right? Like,
we've hit 6 now, and what, over 500 episodes now.
Yeah, and like I think that's the really cool thing about the evolution of some of the sneaker content, like, you know, for yourself especially, like, you know, like people will get those clips from, you know, and this is nothing against Complex or any big business that does this, but like you have to create that drama within those settings in order for it to drive clicks, right? And so there's a lot of that, to your point, like the edits, the cutting in, and like I would never be able to do it. The same reason why you aren't able to fake it. Cause when like I watch those old episodes and like, I just see you like, Matt is not into that shoe at all. And they cut to you and they'll put you on the screen, like almost like frowning or mean mugging the shoe. And it's like, that's not really your, it's not a thing about the shoe. It's just like, not for you. Right.
I don't like it. It's cool.
And that's how I am. Okay. Like you see it on my face. If I'm enjoying it, you see it on my face. If I don't like it, you see it on my face.
Well, I think like, it's like, you know, I think that was a lot of the fun, especially about doing full size run. And it's a lot of fun about sneakers too, is that like sneakers are such like a place where I've always thought it's like a good intersection of like cultures, you know, where there is like sneaker culture itself and it has its roots in like, you know, New York City and basketball and hip hop and all that sort of stuff. But as like sneakers spread, there's like so many people from so many different walks of life that have like different meanings and interactions with sneakers, because we all have to wear sneakers, right? Like it's a very like common ground thing, when like there's many different sneaker cultures and many different countries and many different regional things, and we have all these different ways that, you know, we connect to them. And I always thought that that was like part of the fun thing about being on Full Size Run, where it's like I get to have a conversation with someone like, you know, French Montana, you know, or you know, or someone like Tony Yeo, where it's like on surface, it's like me and him don't have much in common as far as like our lives go, because we've lived very different lives, you know, and come from very different places. And that's totally fine. But then it's like, now we're talking about this one singular thing. Like we're talking like, about white cement Air Jordan 3s, and we may have totally different connections to it. And now we have to like sit and find like commonplace from our different, you know, angles in life on this one sort of sneaker, you know? And it's like, that's where the interaction it come on it. And that was like actually fun to get the different perspectives, even if people on watching it on camera, like someone might be like, wait, you don't like those shoes? And then their reaction, because everyone they've ever known has liked that shoe, you know, their whole course of life.
Well, and I was going to say, like, the evolution of that with the podcast too, right? People are so invested in, like, if you're a podcaster and you're consistent, you do your thing. People are so invested in you. They know you sometimes better than they, than, you know, yourself even, because they're like that, like, it's, I mean, think about it like this. It's like, if the three of us are homies, we talk through text a couple times a week, maybe. Maybe if you're really close, I talk to you on the phone.
Yeah.
But like the person that listens to our podcast every week literally hears us in their ears for an hour, 2 hours a week at times.
Yeah.
So they have a much deeper connection to us, and they get to know us so much more than, you know, like not to say that the writing was bad or any of the things that we do on this, like, you know, content and storytelling is like the big picture, right? But like with podcasts, people like really get past all of the stuff and they get to understand all of the nuances of us as individuals in a way that like most other platforms can't do, right? Like you'll get a clip on social, you'll get a you know, a little bit more on a YouTube video, but like when you sit and listen to somebody talk for an hour, you know, I say stuff on here and I'm thinking, man, I probably said this 100 times on this show or something. You know,
It starts to feel familiar to you and good, but then you're like, I mean, that's because I've already told this story to someone.
Exactly.
Like, it's natural reaction though. Like, people get that. People get the natural, like, oh, I feel this way about that, this. I mean, we go on tangents about stuff that has nothing to do with a sneaker, and people know our Eminem preference at this point, you know? It's like, it's something, like, it's really cool because in writing, which that's how I started with Nick, was writing, and it just you don't get that because it goes through editing, it goes through making sure I get this point across, but here, we have a thing we're going to talk about, a set list, and it's like we go off the rails somewhere and people get to know that personality, which is, I think, really cool. And I think same with you guys, Matt, like you guys will go on tangents on certain, like something different.
Yeah.
They get to know you guys more. And I think that's really cool just as a better way to get people invested into your medium, whatever that may be.
Well, I guess I forget what the phrase is for it, but there's like a term that they use when it's like, when someone like say someone's like a fan of the of our shows, right? And they feel like they know you so much because like they've listened to you like on and on, even though maybe they haven't like personally interacted with you, they have this like idea in their head of like who you are. But then like maybe you'll actually like sit down and have a conversation with the person, and it's so weird because like I don't really know them that well, you know, because it's just like my first time like interacting with them. But they've like feel like they've interacted with me like 1,000 times in the past because they've watched the podcast. So they have this like image that like they know me already, but even though they really don't, you know, where it's like this weird like imbalance of like interaction. I always thought that was like an interesting concept, but
that's true. I didn't think about that because I have people some like message me and they'll have this conversation and like they're super comfortable. And I'm like, it's not that I have anything against this person. I just don't know you. And I'm trying to. I'm trying to meet you there because you got a head start on me because I don't talk to you an hour a week like Nick said. They just kind of get this insight into your life for X amount of time per week. It's really interesting when you think about it that way.
Yeah.
I mean, I think too, like the best thing in this like evolution of sneaker content is like people don't just ask you for free shoes the way they did like 10 years ago. You know, like because that's people were like, oh, I know you because I see you all the time. And I'm like, I hope that I remember your screen name, but like, you know, like if you haven't like DM'd me or like, you know, got my phone number, like, do I like, how much do I really know you? You know what I mean? Like it's a fine line between like, you know, being out there, like you kind of like are a little protective. And I say that to bring up one thing and I was going to ask you like, like the worst like backlash that I ever got when I was at Complex was when we were kind of making, you know, Russ and I used to make fun of sneaker culture and then basically be like, it's us, we're the ones doing the corny shit, you know?
I think he did like, it was like 10 signs you're like a corny sneakerhead or something like that.
And
I always remember he said like 10 signs you're a newbie sneakerhead, and like I don't know why this one blurb always sticks with me, and it's like, you tried to eat the silica packets.
Oh god.
that's the most rest line ever.
You know how it says do not eat on like the back?
Poison.
Speaking of clickbait, I'm glad that is not a clickbait YouTube video that made its way around.
Don't give anybody any ideas.
That would have gotten TikTok banned even faster if they found out kids were dying from eating silica packets.
Well, it's like the, what you call it? Was it Tide Pods people were eating? Yeah, it's like, let's put that in the same like category.
Yeah. Man. But, I mean, it got pretty crazy at times with some of the content that we were putting out. Cause like, you know, we were having fun with it. You know, we were always making fun of ourselves. And like, I mean, Russ, like, I think all of us that have worked with Russ really love and appreciate him. And he's like this, like, you know,
he's one of a kind character.
Totally. And like, I grew up reading his stuff. So like, for me to like be able to work with him and sit in the cubicle with him was like crazy. Like, this is like 17-year-old Nick's losing his mind because he just moved to New York and like couldn't figure out how to get in the door and had to ask somebody and like all this crazy stuff. But, you know, like it was always like in the, you know, making fun of ourselves kind of way, right? Because it's like, you have to be super nerdy to even understand what we're talking about. You know, like you have to be like kind of a goofball about all this stuff for it to be fun. And, you know, I think like people always come, they take things wherever they're at in life, you know, but like there were so many times where, you know, you'd get messages. I mean, I got like people telling me not to come to their city, like, you know, like also, oh yeah, like all sorts of crazy stuff. But like, it was just like, I don't know, like I'm not doing anything, you know, nobody's doing anything like harmful. Violent. We're like trying to just entertain people and educate people and have fun with it. And, you know, I'm curious how that part of the job has evolved for you, because like you said, you know, you kind of got that reputation for a while on the internet that like you were the guy that was going to be the contrarian somehow. How has that changed over the years? Because to me, it seems like since you guys have the podcast and since you guys have like this whole suite of you being out and doing stuff at ComplexCon publicly now pretty regularly over the last few years, like people really get the chance to get to know you like the way I knew you. And, you know, like I appreciate who you are. I think you're a good dude and I like you, you know, like, and I think that's like a cool thing. But like, do you still get a lot of the pushback on all that stuff?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you can't escape it, you know, because it's like being on like a bigger platform too, where it's like you said, you put things on social media where like, I don't think I get as big of a pushback, you know, when I actually go and read the YouTube comments. Cause I would say that's more like friendly fire, you know, where it's like the majority of the people who are in the YouTube comments are people who like weekly watch the show. So like, I used to get people like, you know, who would hate once in a while, but like, you know, they all kind of tend to go away after time. Cause it's like, why are you like watching my show every single week if all you're going to do is post a negative comment?
Exactly. About me?
Like, what are you doing with, like, what are you doing?
Exactly.
With
thanks for the view. Appreciate you. But
I would say, I think that the majority of just like negativity would just come from when like we'll post a clip of the podcast on my Instagram. Like I got a comment yesterday. Let me actually bring this up. So, hold on. Can I find this?
What are you doing? It just amazes me the energy people put into negative comments. And it's like,
Hold on. Yeah. Someone actually like, I got one of these, yesterday. Oh, here it is. Okay. So we had posted about like the PlayStation Air Force One release getting canceled. And like I had mentioned before where I was like, I think that you should make new grails for the new generation, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, and I actually commented on the post itself when we said the shoe got canceled, because I said, good, it got canceled. You know, we don't need another PlayStation Air Force One. We need a new grail.
Yeah.
And I said, make this generation grails at the level of PlayStation Air Force One. Just don't bring back the PlayStation Air Force Ones. And I get a comment from someone who doesn't follow me, so they don't really know. Maybe they've seen me before. And they said, so what about us, the generation of people that was around when PlayStation Air Force Ones dropped and couldn't get them, but was excited when the news first broke of a retro? I've been in this for 30 years. I don't give a damn about your good, they shouldn't, New Balance lovers take, you know? And I'm like, I was into shoes when the PlayStation Air Force Ones came out as well. So I don't know who you're – like, your perception of me is totally flawed. And I don't want to – I thought about, like, arguing back with him, and I guess I'm doing it now because I brought it up. But, you know, it's like those things where it's like, you know, you're like waking up and like walking to the gym at, you know, 7 o'clock in the morning. And then like you get that notification on your phone and it's like all of you wants to be like, and then like you hold it in because learning not like, I feel like there's a fine line between like some once in a while, like a good clapback can actually like help you, because if people are like talking crap about you on the internet and you actually like say something back, it like defends you and lets you know.
Oh,
that,
for
like,
sure.
But also, like, I feel like I got to a point too where it's like, well, people would, I'd clap back at people and it'd get like a lot of attention, but then they were almost like egging me on because they felt like if I clap back at them, it would get them attention too.
Exactly.
You know, where it's like, so the people were almost like, I don't want to say trolling me, but they were trying to like almost like, you know,
yeah, get you to bite,
throw rocks at like the dog with the fence around it. Like, yep. He like jumps up and chases them down the street.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I had to like learn to be like, to like rein it in. Cause I mentally, I thought like, look, someone like Ronnie Feig or someone like Jerry Lorenzo probably gets way more like negative comments than I'll ever get. Right. But you don't see Ronnie Feig or Jerry Lorenzo like clapping back at people on the internet. So I'm like, not that my goal is to be where they're at, but obviously that them being people who are like more successful, I'm like, well, maybe I shouldn't be doing that then if the bigger people aren't going to do that, you know?
For sure.
Yeah. I hope that whoever left that comment never listens to our podcast, because they're going to find out that I don't. I think the Air Force One is completely overrated as a silhouette, and they're going to hate me. So
I'm with you, but, Nick. Don't worry. They're going to hate this entire part of the episode. Well,
did you guys say that that's going to get clipped out somewhere, and they're going to say that I'm associating with Air Force One haters, and I need to like somehow make a public apology. So
they want an actual press conference of you saying I'm sorry to every Air Force One lover.
I'm sorry I was on this podcast. Yeah. Ruined my career.
Something I'm gonna ask you, because it ties in to just everything we talk about. So you mentioned sneakers is like a through line to other things. Like Nick says it all the time. Like me, him, Roy, and Robbie, we have a group text. We talk about sneakers probably 0.1% of the time we're on a message. It just turns into like just other things. And I've noticed something of you recent, I don't mean, when I say recent, it could be years. I'm bad at timing, but you started posting more about like personal journeys within your faith and fitness. And like I was telling you earlier, it's something that was important to me as well, both things. And I guess, has that changed people's perspective of like say, oh, Welty's just this contrarian who just hates everything, seeing his real life part of you? And seeing that, hey, you look, I'm a person of faith. This is things I believe in. And you're not ashamed to post like a Bible verse or something you're going through and how it associates with that Bible verse. And on the flip side, you're not ashamed to show like your CrossFit journey. I hit a PR, or I failed at this, or I got hurt. Has that changed people's perspective of you? Because I think that's awesome. Like being able to show that real life side of you is amazing. I have so much respect for that.
Yeah, I mean, I think like everything, it goes both ways. Like, there's always going to be people, like you said, there's going to be people who are upset, you know, where it's like, I'm not trying to, you know, put myself on a pedestal or like try to prove that like I'm better than others. But there's always people who are going to like take things the wrong way or get offended by, you know, you being just who you are, or you're into the things that you are. So it's like you got to take it with a grain of salt, because sometimes it really rubs you the wrong way, you know, for just like being yourself, you know, and shouldn't have to apologize really for being yourself if that's like, you know, what you have conviction in. But yeah, I think, you know, it's helped where it's like, I never use my platform to like push an agenda, you know, where it's like, I'm not on here to get people to like be into fitness or like go to church, but like, I am who I am. So it's like, these are like the little tidbits of my life that are going to go through. Same as like, Nick doesn't come out here to like try to get people to, you know, be fans of the San Francisco Giants. But like, I think we're going to like maybe
pick up
that he's a San Francisco Giants fan, and it just comes through because that's who you are. So it's like, I don't know. I've always just thought that like everything in life happens for, you know, a reason. And it's like, I'm not going to use my platform to like try to preach to you about that. But the fact that I have this platform, and I can just kind of like, if I can, like, I get people who hit me up who are like, hey, you know, I was feeling down about myself and life, and then I saw that like you work out or you did this, and it like it convinced me to like it really, there was an experience where I was in, so I've gotten to travel the world a considerable amount, which is amazing to me over years. And I was in Malaysia and we were doing this sneaker event called Sneaker Law, and there's like 10,000 kids there, you know, in Malaysia who like know who we are, which is like super weird to me. And me, Brendan, and Trinidad are on stage with Edson from Pada doing this like meet and greet. There's all these kids like behind us with this picture. And then like as I'm going up on stage, this one guy, like everyone wants to take photos, you know, at like it's like sneaker con sort of event where like say if like Fomer Simpson and Kais were there, people would come up to them and want to take photos as well. So this guy like pulls me to the side and I was thought he just wanted to take a photo. And he said to me, he goes, "Hey, I just want you to know that your journey through faith and fitness has inspired me to start working out again. And it's, you know, gotten me more in touch with my religion." And the crazy part too is then I looked down and he had a pair of Adidas Speziales on as well. So I'm like, I even maybe influenced his like sneaker taste. And I'm like, man, I feel like all of that had to happen for a reason, you know, where it's like,
absolutely.
I feel like working in sneakers for so long, it's easy to get like, obviously we all want to be like huge sneaker heads. And that's like, we've been so like blessed to have like sneakers be the thing that like we've centered our careers around. Cause like, how awesome is that? You know, where it's, you get to work with sneakers. Like that's so cool, man. And, but after a while, it's like, you can kind of not like get bored of sneakers, but realize that like there's more in life than sneakers because at the end of the day, they're just like material goods. Yes. You know, if you're someone who's approaching 40 and it's like all you're worried about is like what sneakers are coming out every weekend and not worried about the other stuff in life, where it's like you can kind of be like, hey, does life really matter? You know, where it's like it can lose its meaning, right? Where it's like able to like find some way to like instill meaning into the work that you do without really being preachy about it. I feel like that's been my goal to do what I do. So if I can just help, if there's like 10 people out there that I can subtly help and change their lives just because I talk about sneakers on the internet, but they picked up on something else, then I feel like, oh, I've done my job, you know?
Yeah. And that's amazing because a lot of people don't think that because they, I have a real strong belief that when it comes to the platforms that we're able and blessed to utilize, it's like we can't just always take from it. We have to give something back. And like you said, you're not going out there pushing anything on anybody, but you're giving some sense of positivity back into the world. And like I said, that can affect somebody just like the gentleman in Malaysia, where I didn't go out there and find this person like, I'm going to change your life, but you were able to put some good in the world. And it all stemmed from leather, rubber, and plastic. And again, that's the through line that helps us to connect with people. And that's the reason I was like, man, I want to ask him about this because that's just amazing. Like little things. I mean, I've not been to Malaysia, but I do. I volunteer at my son's Sunday school class and I will be able to talk to kids because I wear my normal clothes there. And they're like, oh, I like your shoes. And we'll talk about something and get into, again, something that can help them out. And it's just awesome to be able to have that immediate icebreaker. It's like, oh, yeah, you talk about sneakers or fill in the blank, you're at the gym. And it's just really cool to have that built-in ease into the conversation without having to, like, say, just force it. Because, hey, you know me, I don't know you. We're going to sit here kind of weirdly look at each other until we get to that meeting ground, you know?
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, it's just entertainment. Like, people come here because they love shoes and they want to be entertained. So you never want to, like, lose sight of, like, the reason they're coming to you is because they love sneakers and they just, like, maybe they have a lot of like things going on in their personal lives, but they want something that like takes them away from the stuff in their personal lives. And then if they can get just like the little like grain of something that like keeps them moving, because I feel like everyone wants some sort of inspiration. It's like,
most definitely.
I don't know. Why not do it? You know, or it's like, and I feel like we've all gone through this at one point or another where it's like, you know, recently I got rid of like 100+ pairs of shoes and like, you know, not downgraded, but like just gave away a lot and just like kind of purged a lot of my sneaker collection. And it just made you realize it's like, as time goes on, it's like all the sneakers you have from like 20 years ago, it's like, you're never going to be able to wear these again. And it's like, okay to part with them. That was the hardest thing for me. It's like, I open up boxes of Air Maxes from like 2008, 2009. And I'm like, man, I just like, I want to hold on to this because it's from the era that like, I love sneakers so much in. I can't just hold on to this forever because one, I can't wear it. And then it's like, two, it's just like, you feel like you're getting to the point of like being a hoarder, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Totally. I know what that looks like. I'm like, man, every time I get on this podcast, I look behind me and like, this is a problem. I try to give them away. Yeah. I think Nick's the same way. We try to give away as much as we can, but it's just like, it is just a revolving door. things in well, and
there's out. Certain well, things are going to be sentimental. Like, Nick, you have the Opium 180s behind you, and I know that's like a shoe that, you know, that you're like really passionate about. But I'm sure you've also, like, I've seen you, like, you've given away a lot of shoes too, like, you know, over the years, where it's not like you're trying to do it because you're like, I want to feel like a good person because I gave away sneakers. But you just realize you, like, walk into a room and there's 300 pairs of sneakers. And one, it's like overtaking your life, and you don't ever want sneakers to feel like they're a burden to you. But then when
they are, though.
I know, but they are. Being a sneakerhead is like cool, but it's also like kind of not cool because it gets to a point where it was like, man, I had sneakers in my living room. I had sneakers in my bedroom. It was just like, it's just way too much. And you're just like, this isn't like, it's actually like bringing down my mood, you know, because it's like you walk and your like house is cluttered because of.
It's invasive at a certain point. It's like I'm swimming through shoes in my house.
But if you can like, if we've been given all these shoes, you know, where it's like we do go out and buy shoes, but it's like, you know, a brand sends you some shoes and maybe you wear them twice or you don't wear them and it's totally fine. Like, who cares? But then you're able to like use it to like give it to someone who's going to appreciate it so much more. It almost feels like maybe you were given this shoe for a reason to like you give it to someone else and now they have a pair of sneakers, you know?
Yeah, 100% agree absolutely. With that. Yeah. And I think too, like, you know, like kind of circling back to what you said about your experience in Malaysia, you know, I think that like sneakers are kind of like the gateway drug to deeper meaningful relationships, right? Like, you know, like, I mean, Matt, you and I spent a few nights out sitting at a bar talking, you know, like things like that, like absolutely change your relationship with a person, you know, like they they give you such more perspective. And like, you know, I think like that to me is still like what I always try to come back to with all this stuff is like, it's just stuff. Like, I'm a hoarder. Like, I have no, there's no way around it. Like, I have a storage unit still, I have a house full still, I've given away hundreds of pairs in my lifetime, you know, like I buy, I mean, Mike knows, like there are times where I'm buying like 10 or 15 shoes a month. And like, I try to like keep the turnover and get it out and be like, okay, well, but then I'm like, I love this stuff, you know, like if I know, oh, it like I have certain save search eBay searches for other people because I know shoes that they would just lose their mind over. Right. And like, for instance, like a friend of mine was a big Hannon fan.
Yeah.
The 576, the original, you know, like Hannon collab with the red and the gold heel. I found a pair of those in my girlfriend's size and I was like, well, I'm going to buy them because like, I'll never see these in person again.
Yeah.
But my save search is for a different size completely. I just happened to come across them and like, she wore them this week, like for like the first time in like a year or two. Right. And I was like, it's wild to me that like, I know these things about people just because we were nerding out about sneakers. And like, you know, like how cool is that, that we even have to your guys' conversation, right? To be able to bless somebody with a pair like that, like, you know, whether it's a grail status or just something that they loved, you know, like Andrew Sneakers Preservation Society has a pair of Nike Lambastes for me, you know, like the Air Lambaste is one of the only, I think I'm probably one of like 10 people on the internet that even cares about that shoe. But it was like the first shoe. It was the first shoe that I got to buy the shoes, the socks, the shorts, the whole. Like, I was like, I'm playing basketball, and like I had a job, and like got to get into it. It was like early years for me, and he found out that that was one of my favorite shoes, and he's like, you know, I'm gonna set this aside for you. Just whenever you're up, you know, in the area, come and get it from me, kind of thing. And like that to me is like just encompasses like the beauty of sneakers and, you know, your experience there, Mike getting to talk to his kids' school and you know, and church, and like that kind of stuff is just like, you can't even put that into words what it means on both sides of it, right? Because like when you get that confirmation from literally around the other side of the globe, it's like, well, all right, like this is much bigger than what we're talking about. But like, you know, it gives people that little bit of an escape from their world, and then they connect to you and understand things. And, you know, I'm just, you know, again, I'm just thankful for the journey. Like, it's just been such a wild ride for me, and, you know, for you, and revisiting some of this has been super awesome for me.
And it's funny because you mentioned it, and it's like, I think this is a good, you know, full circle moment and maybe a good place to end on. So it's like, I'm going through all my shoes and getting rid of stuff. And I've been good friends with the people at Hannon for, you know, a long time. And, you know, they unfortunately shut down, I think, last year.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm going through a bunch of shoes, and they had done this two-pack Adidas ZX420 collection, maybe like five, six years ago. And I think it was based off of like the idea that like when you die or something like that, you have to like pay the toll to like get across the, you know, the water. And it's like, I'm going through all this stuff and throwing out all these knickknacks, and like something came and fell down, you know, from one of the boxes, and it sat on the floor. And I actually put it in my pocket as a reminder. I don't know why, but they did like a little like fake like coin for Hannon that's like made to like kind of like pay the toll.
That's cool. Yeah.
As you go, you know, to the next life. But I don't know. I just put it in my jean pocket because I'm like, I'm going to throw out all this stuff, but this feels like a good reminder of like to keep on keeping on, you know? So
that's a good keeper.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, man. Yeah, awesome, that's a beautiful thing.
It is. Yeah. It is. Well, shoot, man. Like, I know, like, we have talked about a ton today, and we appreciate it, Matt, man. I know you're busy out there. I mean, if anyone didn't know, which would be silly, cause I'm sure they do if they listen to us, let them know where to find you, man.
Complex Sneakers. You can go watch the old episodes of Full Size Run on YouTube. You can go watch new episodes of the Complex Sneaker Show on YouTube as well. A new episode coming out. Well, I don't know when this comes out, but comes out Friday, tomorrow, with Puneet Soul Supreme, where we talk about the, you know, what's going on with the sneaker resale industry. And actually, this is like how crazy my day is sometimes, where it's like I wasn't supposed to do this today, but I'm actually going to be interviewing Stefan Marbury in an hour and a half.
Oh, nice, man.
I won't be on camera. It's like interviewing him like third. Oh, there you go.
Oh, wow. Oh, I thought you had Starberries for a second. I was like, Nick.
It's the N1s. Like, this was like the signature shoe, you know? Like, I pulled them out today because it was his birthday, and I was like, we did a little thing in our Discord where people, like, the guys will come up with a theme, right? And it'd be like, oh, it's Super Bowl week, so wear a Super Bowl theme shoe. And this week I was like, well, it just happens that Thursday has like four birthdays. It's like Barkley, Marbury, Rihanna, and Kurt Cobain. And I was like, that's enough sneaker. I mean, there's a good variety there, right? The so like we can things. All find some stuff. So I pulled those out. That's so funny though. That's dope. I mean, yeah. I mean, look, that's another one of those things as a kid that you're just like, you just can't believe it. You know, like you tell 16, 17 year old Matt that he's getting to interview Stefan Marbury.
Yeah.
Even if you weren't a basketball fan, like he was so you know big in is. New York. Yeah, you know? Knew yeah. Marbury. So, yeah, man, awesome. That's cool.
Cool. Well, shoot, man. Matt, again, appreciate it, man. Y'all check out the Sneaker Complex Sneaker Podcast. You guys check out, of course, us here at Sneaker History. Subscribe to both. And until next time, guys, see ya.
Peace.
Awesome.
Hey, y'all. Nick here. One more thing before you take off. Do us a solid and leave us a review on your favorite podcast platform. Check the links in the description to help us keep the show going. And as always, we appreciate you listening. And don't forget to tell someone you like their kicks today. You never know how far a compliment will take you, and we all know how good it feels to be on the receiving end of some appreciation. Peace.